Hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And here we are with episode 68 of Destroy All Culture with Aiden Morgan and me, Adam P. Nave.
Bow!
Whammo!
Blam! Etc.
Shaboingy! I don't know. this is why I never got that job working for the Bat and West Batman show before I was born. And, actually, real quick, I know we have a bunch of stuff we want to talk about, but I have been watching Powerless. That weird problem where it's like I wasn't catching up, like I thought I was an episode behind.
Yes.
They basically aired the right episodes. I don't even know, but I'm caught up now. And in the right place. And Natalie Morales makes the show so much better.
Oh, I'm not surprised. I'm at episode 5. Mm. So I believe I have 6, 7, and 8 to catch up on.
Yeah, I mean, the last two episodes, one of which has a little teeny bit of Natalie Morales, and the next one, which has more, are way better, not just because of her. I mean, her scenes are obviously great. But in general, it feels kind of more like they've gotten a handle on the show a little bit.
Okay. That's good.
So hopefully it all works out.
I figured they would have to. Yeah, I actually kind of enjoyed episode 5. I don't really remember much about it. Oh, Teddy, a.k.a. Danny Pudi, is entered into that contest.
Yes.
That contest. And I mean, that worked for me mostly because it was about Danny Pudi.
Right. Yeah, no, they're giving him more to do because I think they're realizing that he will save them all. yeah, they're kind of starting to get there, although it's actually really funny. There's one of these, you know, we track the shows that might be canceled, and it was doing this whole article on, like, superhero shows that, you know, are coming back and might not be coming back. And they're like, what's on the bubble? And they, of course, listed this because the ratings aren't great for Powerless. Mm-hmm. But one of the things they listed as on the bubble that no one knew if it was going to be renewed yet was iZombie. And I'm like, but because it just started its season. Like, they don't have any data.
That's really bizarre. Yeah, like, we're, what, 2 episodes into the season now?
Yeah.
So, yes. Yeah,
so... Idiots abound.
Idiots abound, indeed.
Anyway, so I saw, we should probably just kill this off first, just because I saw Fate of the Furious and you didn't.
It's true.
So I don't want to spoil it for you. I do want to start, though, with the, you know, people tend to put the series down. And part of that I know is just because when it started, it wasn't what it became. And it's hard to catch up in mentally. Do you know what I mean?
That's true. I mean, and it's been through many, many an iteration. Although I found out that the Japanese name for the franchise is really good.
What is it?
It's more consistent. Instead of like all those iterations, it's Wild Speed.
Nice. I like that.
And like one, like I think 4 is Wild Speed Max, and installment 5 is Wild Speed Mega Max. I mean, it's hard to get better than that.
Yeah.
None of this Fate of the Furious or Fast and Furious, just Wild Speed.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to remember the names of all of them, because it's really funny if you just list them, you're like, what even happened here? Because it's The Fast and the Furious, then Too Fast, Too Furious, then Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift.
And then Fast and Furious.
Right, and then Fast 5, and then Fast and Furious 6. And then Furious 7, and now Fate of the Furious, which, you know, F8, because Fate.
I've told you my pitch for the ninth installment.
Yeah.
It's Fine of the Furious, in which Dominic Toretto spends the entire time in the DMV lineup, because he has to pay all the fines he's accrued over the last, you know, 7 or 8 movies.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
And he's just,
yeah, but no, so yeah. When the movie started, you know... The first movie is like a Point Break ripoff. It really is just the plot of Point Break.
Oh, sure.
And the second one, of course, they didn't get Vin Diesel, and it kind of falls off the rails really quickly, because...
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, no, as much as Paul Walker, you know, again, you know, may he rest in peace, is a lot of fun in the movies, he's mostly a lot of fun in contrast to Vin Diesel. so by right, himself and with Tyrese, it didn't quite work.
Right.
You know, and again, you know, Tyrese and Ludacris both end up in the series again, and they're both great standout characters. So hey, you know, Tokyo Drift was eh.
I haven't seen Tokyo Drift, although I've read in the last week, because every movie now generates multiple right. think pieces. I've read two articles claiming that Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift is the best of the series.
That is bullshit, but okay.
I guess Justin Lin directed it there, so that's their.
Well, he did a bunch, directed right? multiple ones. He did like yeah. three, four, and five, and like there's only been one writer since like he wrote three straight through. He's writing all the rest of them.
I think yeah, Chris Morgan I think is yeah. the writer. Yeah.
But. Anyway, no, and you know, it was three actually almost killed the franchise. They were going to stop there.
Whoa.
Because it wasn't really working. And then apparently at the end of it, they made a deal with Vin Diesel to come back for a minute and then star in four if they do it in return for getting the rights to all the Riddick stuff.
Oh, that's a what a great deal that would be.
Well, like, he desperately wanted the rights to the Riddick stuff. So.
Oh, okay. Nice.
But anyway, so four happened, and four is kind of the first real sequel to one.
Mm, yes.
Because it has been Diesel and you know, and Paul Walker. And then there's kind of this hardline break in a weird mentally.
Yeah,
between
fast,
four and five.
Fast Five is, I think,
I think it's the best one, first of all.
I agree. And it was the first one that basically, it was that, they said we can really ramp things up and of course they bring in Dwayne Johnson in Fast Five, but it was sort of the point before, like after they said, you know, they don't have to just be normal car, you know, race car driver thief people, but before they went, oh, they can be like crazy, like superhuman Bond characters, as you get.
Well,
from...
no, it still really kind of did though, because Five is in terms of the relationships between the characters, Five is this weird problem, because like the end of four kind of takes that step toward mm-hmm. like now, you know, Brian and Dom are family sort of, but it kind of doesn't really earn it quite.
Mm-hmm.
And then in five, it's a done deal and shut up.
Yeah.
But no, five is the first time they really just go, you know, we're going to bring in like a whole super team. We're going to have like a heist. It's going to be an international thing.
Oh, sure.
And of course, six and seven is what's considered, it's a trilogy essentially, because all of them kind of are a domino effect. Like, what happens in five is what causes six. Six causes seven.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in a direct line, it's not like there's a break of like, well, I guess we need another mission. You know, just, they cause this.
Right.
Eight follows that trend.
Ah.
Eight is actually spillover from the first trilogy as a whole, which is interesting.
Oh, interesting.
It uses all the pieces. But here's the thing. Because, again, they're kind of a big deal here. Okay, they're fairly popular. Internationally, they're enormously popular.
I'm not surprised.
It just broke the worldwide opening weekend record.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it did just over 100 million here. But it did like close to 4.5 million international.
Nice. So I'm going to assume that they bring in Charlize Theron, like after Mad Max Fury Road, they'll be like, yeah, let's have her drive a lot. Is that what happens?
Nope. You don't see her in a car.
That is, I knew the answer to that question, but yeah, that is a funny choice.
Well, it actually kind of weirdly works. Fate of the Furious is my second favorite behind five, just because five is the first gathering of the team. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of like watching these characters bump up against each other in fun ways.
Yeah.
And it also helps that like Han and Giselle, you know, those two characters, which obviously by eight, I don't think this is a huge spoiler, have to be killed off.
Hmm.
Because, you know, Han dies in three and they had to catch up to it.
Oh, okay.
And because he starts, like, he falls in love with the Giselle character, you know, Gal Gadot, the only way to get him to three, to the place he is in three, is to kill her off.
Ah. Oh.
So, like, they both die in six. And so it's kind of desperately important. You know, I think it actually the death of Han is repeated in seven because it's like an after credit sequence in six.
Okay, this franchise is just like Doctor Who level time tripping bullshit.
It really isn't. It's just it really is. It's just that like seriously, like four, 5 and 6 all take place before 3.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then they're caught up, you know. 7 starts at the end of 3, basically. But, you know, the 6 and 7 are okay. They're fun. You know, they're big, goofy, silly fun.
Oh, they sure are. It's true.
But 8, you know, like 5, has something extra.
Hmm.
A, 8 has 2 of the funniest scenes they've ever done in the movies. Just outright, like, amazingly hysterical, perfect scenes that go on for a while. Okay. One is an action scene, one isn't, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay.
But it also does have, you know, it has, like, the big action set pieces that are ridiculous and funny. It starts with one of the greatest street race scenes they've ever done.
Okay.
Which I really don't want to spoil, because it's one of these things, if you keep thinking, like, they're going someplace, and then they go somewhere slightly different, and you're like, what am I even watching now? Like, what, how ridiculous is this? And it's amazing for it. And again, they continue the major themes of the movies, which is, you know, the whole family idea.
Mm, yes.
Like, if you watch a bunch of them, you notice that, like, almost everyone has a, you know, they always talk about family. There's almost always, like, all the characters sitting down to dinner and saying grace in almost everyone.
Oh, yeah.
Like, as weird as it is for this big action movie thing, like, they actually have a lot of weird heart, and this one has a whole lot of that.
Hmm.
They have a little teeny blip where they have to excuse, because, you know, in the world, like, in the universe of the movies, Brian, Paul Walker's character, is not dead. Because that would be a huge problem for them.
Oh, right.
Because, you know, he's married to Dom's sister, they have 2 kids, like...
So how do they deal with Paul Walker?
Well, at the end of 7, basically, he's going to have a 2nd kid, and it's one of these, like, you know, this is your life now. It's kind of, 7 is sort of Brian's midlife crisis.
Right.
I'm like, I don't know if I'm set off for this, and then he kind of accepts it. And then in 8, they kind of have this moment of, like, you know who could really help us with this is Brian, and they're like, no, we swore we would never call him in. Because he's off with his family now, we don't want to drag him back into this life.
Okay.
It's just like one line. But it's a little bit of like, just, we have to say something, because it would make sense to bring him into this.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously they can't.
Right.
So there's a little teeny bump there, but no, they have fun with it. They, you know, I think part of it is they have to also expand the team. They do kind of expand the team a little bit. There's like a character from 7 who stays with them. And they also add, like, a new guy who's kind of with them who... Did you see 7?
I did, actually. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so remember Mr. Nobody?
Mm-hmm.
So Kurt Russell's back, and...
Oh, yeah.
He kind of has a little protege this time, who everyone jokingly refers to as, like, as Little Nobody for a while.
Is that played by Scott Eastwood?
Yes.
Okay.
And he kind of inexplicably joins them and starts driving around with them. And I think it was just they needed a token white boy on the team. Mm. That's the only reason I can think of for why he just randomly starts getting targeted. Because it makes no sense from a character view, like, why he would get that involved that way.
Right.
And then by the end, he's very much, like, with them, and it's like, oh, okay.
That's awesome.
It also has the... Because, you know, the other theme of those movies... are that everyone is motivated by family, even the bad guys.
That's true.
And so we kind of have the redemption of Statham's character. Because they realize that he was only ever after them because of his brother, and he feels the same way about his family, and he's willing to work with them for this thing, at first because he's forced to, and then he kind of grudgingly likes them.
Yeah, because he was, like the major villain in, was it 7? I can't remember now.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because his brother was the major villain in 6.
Right.
So now he's kind of on the team. I don't know if him and Dwayne Johnson will be in the next one.
Well,
or if it's going to be him and not Dwayne Johnson.
Right.
Because they gave Dwayne Johnson's character an out in this one.
I'm not surprised because, I mean, just from what I've read, apparently the rumored feud between Johnson and Diesel... was not rumored, and apparently they rarely appear. They very rarely even appear in the film together.
Well, it's also been explained what happened.
Hmm.
There's a scene that's cut down in the movie, and I think I know which scene it was. There's like 2 or 3 it could be, with Johnson and Statham, and the studio wanted this bigger scene to kind of set up a spin-off movie.
Ah.
And Diesel got really upset because he, you know, these movies are his mentally, and it's all about this one family, and they're not just like big dumb action movies as much as they are, because they are also all about the family and all this stuff, and he didn't want it to be a thing. He kind of wants to do like his next trilogy and that's it, and end the universe. And so he put his foot down and basically stopped the movie. And so they had to edit this scene, and, you know, Johnson understandably got upset because he was like, but I would like the money.
Yeah, you're stepping on my career here, buddy.
Right. So I have a feeling that he won't be in the next one, but they have Statham to pull forward instead. But no, it's a lot of fun. It's, if you like the movies at all, it's a great entry in the series. Like I said, I think it's better than 6 and 7, definitely. As much as I like those. You know, and I, again, you can actually just start with 5. You don't need to ever see 1 through 4. If you're these characters come out of nowhere, it doesn't matter, you know?
No, I remember watching 5 was the one that kind of rekindled my interest in the whole franchise, because I enjoyed the first one. The second one I was found pretty dismal. Third I didn't watch. Fourth I barely remember. But 5 was the one where I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah, what's funny is like I saw the first one, I liked it. I saw the second one, I didn't really like it much. I caught the third one kind of in passing and stopped there. And which is fine, because the fourth one isn't that great. But it's kind of sad, because like people started telling me like, oh, this is what this thing became. I'm like, okay, well, I'll go back and watch them. Like, I'm sorry, I missed these, because they're amazing in the theater, frankly.
Oh, I'm because they're just
big, glorious, you know, huge action set pieces. But the other thing is like they have these lines of dialogue that like should not work on paper, but because of the universe you're in and just the way it all works, they kind of land right. And it's hysterical, because it's a series that allows you to laugh at it without ever winking.
Yes, yes.
No,
it's clearly like, I mean, it's clearly they sat down and said, what do you like in a movie? I like car chases. What if I gave you a movie that was just car chases? All right. And they went from there. That's great. Right.
Yeah, I also do appreciate that, like, all the movies always have a street chase, like, just, like, not even like a, we're running from the cops, although that's always there, you know, running from whoever. But there's just a straight up just street race in every movie.
Yeah.
Which is a nice touch.
I like that too.
It's in their DNA. They don't forget their roots.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, no, it's definitely worth seeing. I love it.
Do they drink Coronas in this one?
Oh, God, yes.
Here's a really important question. Does Vin Diesel wear white pants in Fate of the Furious?
Yes.
All right, then.
Because
that's, oddly enough, that's one of the things I remember most from Fast Five is, yeah. It's like, wow, that's, those are some white pants.
He tends to wear either, like, white or black. Like, that's kind of it.
Yeah. And you can tell it's sort of like, but you can really tell it was the reason he's wearing, like, white pants is not because Dominic Toretto wears white pants. It's because Vin Diesel wears white. Right. I'm almost certain that's the case.
I will say, by the way, that you are best served if you watch 5, 6, and 7 right before you see 8, because there's a lot of callbacks.
Oh, nice. Okay.
You don't necessarily need, but there's like there's little lines that are just like little callbacks to 7. There's some plot stuff that's called back to like 5 and 6. So there's a lot of kind of callback in this, which is nice, because it makes it feel like this is this big continuity-heavy world. Not overwhelmingly so, but just, it's not just, let's just put out a movie.
Right.
So yeah. No, it's good times.
That makes me happy.
And speaking of good times, Doctor Who came back.
Yeah, it was a good time. Yes, I just my personal taste, I thoroughly enjoyed this episode of Doctor Who. I'm a big fan of Pearl Mackie's Bill.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't think I wouldn't be. But in many ways, actually, she reminds me a lot more of a Russell Davies companion than a Stephen Moffat companion.
Well, right, because she doesn't seem to be just the center of the universe.
Exactly, yeah. And she seems to be an actual, like, I thought, wait a minute, does Stephen Moffat, like, come up with an actual female character? Like,
yeah, no, some
had to
some
make
people,
her gay in order to make it work.
Some people I follow on Twitter actually are having a discussion, and, like, they're mostly comic writers, and actually, I think they've all written Doctor Who at some point, weirdly enough, comic-wise.
Yeah.
But they were pointing out the fact that, like, you know, regeneration doesn't really reset the show, but the companions reset the Doctor.
Oh, that's a good way of looking at it.
Isn't it? Like, I just, I saw that, and I was like, I need to, like, keep that in mind, because it's true.
Yeah.
You know, this also, of course, weirdly, often feels like, whatchamacallit, Douglas Adams stuff all over the place.
Oh, God, yes. And not just because we watched Hitchhiker's Guide recently, but also it really did. I thought it did have kind of a Douglas Adams vibe to it
What's funny is that it takes a lot from Dirk Gently. But the stuff it takes from Dirk Gently, you have to remember, is all stuff that Adams took from his unproduced Doctor Who stuff.
Of course.
Which is all the Shada thing, which was never actually made.
Right.
Which he then reused a lot for
Dirk Gently stuff.
Huh. For Dirk Gently, and now Moffat has gone ahead and put it back in Doctor Who, which is kind of amusing.
how the worm is turned, they say, except...
But yeah, no, I liked it. I think Capaldi is really kind of centered in on who his Doctor is, and I really do like his version of the Doctor.
There's a lot of... Yeah, this one he sort of manages to bring a lot of melancholy that he's sort of picked up over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah.
But also, he's really sort of nailed that playful but kind of frightening aspect, which is pretty grand. Although I'd like to know, I mean, but the thing I also enjoy, and this is what I enjoy quite a bit about the Moffat seasons, is that he's really good at setting up the questions that'll drive the season.
There was one slip, I thought, that was weirdly noticeable.
Oh, do tell.
So Bill questions everything in a glorious way.
Yes.
Including the great, like, wait, but if you're not from Earth, why'd you name it in English?
I love how we respond. Nobody ever brings that up.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird lampshade, but whatever. Yeah,
well, whatever. Exactly.
But when she notices the Doctor in the photographs, I thought it was a nice touch. She talks about how she has no pictures of her mother, and then they suddenly find a box. It's obvious the Doctor just gave her, this was his Christmas gift to her.
Yes.
But she spots him in one of the pictures, and then never mentions it to him.
I think, you know what, I noticed that as well, and I thought, maybe they just ran out of time to address
that. Yeah, I feel like there was a scene that there was written where she was just like, wait a minute, were you in these pictures? She's like, don't be ridiculous. And then there's probably like a line later on when she's like, wait, it goes through time. Hey! And thus, don't be ridiculous, you know?
Right.
And maybe it'll come up in the next episode or two, but it just felt like a weird blip.
Yeah, I was at first worried when I saw that, and then I saw there's that, you know, that bit where you can see the Doctor in a mirror. I thought, at first, my first thought was, oh, God, no, she has some history, like her family has history with the Doctor, and it's going to be some sort of like... Once more, she's going to be the most important thing in the cosmos. But then I realized that it wasn't that, or at least I hope to God.
Yeah, I never went to there. It was weird because it was right after the Christmas thing, and so it just felt like such a natural progression that it never hit me with the oh God, here we go.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought this was it's not very often you get in this whole Doctor Who series that you get a new companion with the same Doctor. So that's, I mean, not always. So, I mean, often you get like a new companion, new Doctor, or like a new Doctor and an old companion. So it's always most interesting when you get the same Doctor with a new companion.
You did with Davies, because yes. Tennant had three companions.
Right. Yeah, Tennant's Doctor had quite a few, it's true.
But no, Moffat just kind of hung out with Clara after Amy, you know, and that was it.
Yeah. So nice to have somebody new. I was reading an interview with Pearl Mackey on Vulture, and apparently No, this is just according to her, so who knows? Apparently the whole reason that the character is gay is because it was originally written as straight, but that opening monologue about her feeding chips to someone until they were too fat to be attractive, which, come on, Moffat. Moffat had written it as she was feeding them to a boy and then said, wait, that doesn't really make sense. It makes more sense if it's a girl. So, thank you, Moffat.
That's weird.
Thank you so much, Moffat, for making an entire character decision based on, notions of female vanity, which, okay, whatever.
And again, given Doctor Who and all the characters who have been, omni, pan, and bisexual throughout the years, that it never even comes up.
Yes.
Like, there's never a moment of like, but she's a girl. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing.
Sorry, that would be highly amusing. But you're a girl.
Yeah, it's just...
That doesn't make any... Not at all. And he just kicks her off into that rock quarry in the future and says, stay there, you freak, and leaves. Yeah.
Right. Luckily that's not a thing that happens.
But it does keep her from obviously her cosmic true love. In the person of Heather the super intelligent spaceship oil.
Yes.
I really love that that when you talk about Doctor Who you end up saying stuff like that.
Yeah, it's always a good time. I do wonder about this little spaceship that can apparently just, A, track the TARDIS. I guess it tracks, Bill. But throughout all space and time, kind of instantly, is a little weird to me.
It is a little odd, because the TARDIS is supposed to be sort of, the exceptional. It's supposed to be the thing that can, just jaunt through space and time. But so can this puddle. So, sure. Because of the power of, an offhand promise and true love. Or also Moffat's very sort of famous reliance on, or the trick of here's a machine that's going to take you literally.
Right.
And half of Moffat's villains are sort of machines that are overly literal machines.
Yeah, I did like the little evil speech. That felt very Davies era.
That was great.
I say Davies era, but it is also very much early Moffat, sort of this understanding of the world is not as horrible as you think, but it is, but just not in the way that you think.
Right. Dangerous, but not evil.
And it's an important point, because there is also evil. There are Daleks.
Yeah. And of course, and what is the line at the end of that monologue? Or maybe you think your bacon sandwich loves you back.
Sandwich loves you back. Yeah.
Which I thought was great. Yeah, that was a wonderful bit.
So yeah, hopefully we're getting a good kickoff. We're getting a good season of Doctor Who. Moffat will go out on top.
Yes.
And we will see what happens from there. Of course,
we'll find out what's in the vault.
New Doctor. We're going to get probably a new companion.
Yeah,
they've already sort of been hinting that Bill is just one season. Well, and you notice, companions who come in when it's known that this is the last season for the Doctor, at least in the modern era, never really last.
That's true. That's a shame.
But also, even more than that, they've been hitting the, in the ads and all the monologues with, she's like, I'll die for this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that that's very obviously going to happen. So yeah, whatever.
That's a shame.
As long as it's a good time, I'm fine with it. Look, Donna is still my favorite companion of the modern era, and she only got one season, but it's an amazing season.
Oh, that's right. It's funny. I always forget that she, because it seemed pretty momentous. And it's funny, because the fourth season had, lots of episodes which I did not enjoy very much. But right. My overall impression from that time is from that season is positive.
Yeah. Oh, and it's just because, Donna and the Doctor... worked so well together. Yes. And I'm hoping that we get that again.
Yes. Oh, one other thing. I really liked the response to being mind wiped, or the threat of being mind wiped.
Yeah.
First off, saying I've seen, that's your problem. You don't think people have seen movies. I know what a mind wipe looks like.
Yeah, that was nice.
Fantastic. And then there was the, when she basically turns it around, which is the same as, do you think your bacon sandwich loves you back? When she says, have you had it done to you? you know, how would you feel if you imagine having it feel done to you, which it was, of course, right?
Well, right, and they play. I don't know if you caught it, but they shift into the old Clara theme.
Yes,
when
yes,
she says it, I was like, "That's a nice." It's one of the. I like Murray Gold's themes. I do. I like his music, but they are in the mix usually really too heavy-handed with it.
Yeah,
and they have been. The entire modern era has been plagued by that problem. Let's be honest.
Oh, indeed.
But I thought this episode he was fairly subtle with some of that.
Fair
like, whoever was doing the mixing was like, let's just tone this back just a little bit.
Yeah, actually, I think that was one of the things that made this feel... There was a lot more silence in this episode than a lot of other Doctor Who.
And just to be clear, we don't mean the silence.
No, not the silence. Just general quiet.
Yeah.
Like, the entire opening scene... Like, the opening scene was so... Seemed so abrupt that I wondered if perhaps I had missed some of it or somewhere.
I felt the same. Yeah. It kind of comes out of nowhere. Overall though, a good start to things.
Mm-hmm.
A good new companion. You know, we have the Doctor kind of settled into being written for him. Any number of callbacks, and you know, this is the Doctor who's letting himself feel old finally.
Right. He was like spent 50 years in Bristol, presumably while he's also carrying on adventures with others, with Clara at the same, and all the other companions at the same time.
Well, so long as he doesn't meet himself, he's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
And obviously, they'll do the vault, which will be the big overarch season thing.
Right, exactly. Just like Dark Matter in the first season.
I'm hanging up now. So,
I gotta say though, that vault in the Dark Matter, that mystery was so good. It wasn't even a mystery.
Just, no.
I'm sorry. Yeah, okay, I'll stop.
No, you're not.
not at all.
So anyway, we are finally delivered on our promise that we both finally had time. We went back. We watched.
The Hitchhiker's
Guide movie, which, of course, you have to remember was, in fact, even though he never got to see it produced, was written by Adams, co-written by Adams. And again, I think the big thing to always remember with Hitchhiker is that it started off as a radio play, then Adams had to adapt it as a book, which is very different in a lot of respects from the radio plays.
Right, then it was a TV show.
Then he wrote it for TV, and it was very different from either of the two.
Oh, yes.
And now, then he finally got to write it as a screenplay, and it was very different from everything else. And he makes changes to fit the medium.
Exactly.
Frankly. And I think all of his changes in terms of like story and all this were very spot on.
Well, it felt much more like a... It felt very much more like a movie. I mean, it was clearly...
Right.
Like, the romance story was foregrounded in certain ways to, like, actually just movie it up.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I think the changes fit the medium very well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did the story, the core of the story, in 2 hours as opposed to, like, 8 hours or 12 hours, whatever the hell it was, for the radio play and the TV show. Like, and the infinite time of the books. you know, now again, the cast was phenomenal.
It was good. I was a little disappointed that they had to cast such a crew of American actors for the show. They acquitted themselves
American
well.
Actors?
Mos Def, Sam Rockwell, and Zooey Deschanel.
Is Sam, I always forget Sam Rockwell's American, weirdly enough.
Oh yeah. You had Alan Rickman as Marvin, and you had, like, Tim Freeman as Arthur Dent.
Well, now let's be clear here. We had Alan Rickman as the voice of Marvin with Warwick Davis in the suit.
In the suit, yes.
And I just feel he deserves credit there. You had Stephen Fry as the guide.
As the narrator, yes.
You had Malkovich in there as Hamakavula. And, of course, Helen Mirren doing the voice of Deep Throat.
Oh, that's... Okay.
Bill Nighy doing Slorty Bartfast, like...
Bill Nighy was great.
You know, I was talking with Frank, actually, and he pointed the weak link in the cast, as much as there is one, is Zooey Deschanel. And it's almost not fair, because, like, you look at the amount of talent on the page, and it's like, someone has to pull the short straw.
Yes. I agree. Yeah, her her performance could have used a little bit more performing, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, but she gets
away with a lot just based on being Zooey Deschanel. So that was fine.
But I did figure out, for me at least, what kind of made the movie almost not work in a weird way. Like, what hits that level of, like, when you first watch it, you're like, this might work. Which is the opening song. The tone is wrong.
It is wrong.
And again, talking with Frank about it, weirdly, because I just mentioned that we'd been watching it and we were both talking about it, was his feeling is that it was the lyrics weren't dark enough.
That could be.
If you'd done the jointy music with a darker set of lyrics, it would have worked. I think he could be on to something there. I think we just didn't need it at all.
Well, here's the thing. There are two openings into the movie. There's the musical dolphin number with the credits, but then after the Earth is destroyed, it actually switches to the name Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I know that Douglas Adams, you know, wrote the screenplay, but I honestly think that there were competing visions for this movie. And they pop up here and there. There's the two different openings. Several times I noticed that like Stephen Fry would say something, and then you'd hear it again in dialogue. I thought
he did co-write it. So there were passes after it. Of course, when they're actually shooting it, Adams had already died. So I think that's where you're getting a lot of that problem.
Yeah. No. I think there are people. There are a lot of different. There's a lot of different ideas in there, and much like Douglas Adams, any Douglas Adams work, some of it worked really well, some of it didn't, and that's just Douglas Adams. Like, he had tons of ideas, and I mean, some of them don't work. The nature of I think a creative brain like Adams is that he's going to throw a bunch of stuff out there, and the stuff that doesn't work is going to go by quickly enough that you're going to forgive it.
Well, and here's, I think, the actual core of that problem, frankly, is that Adams, you know, along with Pratchett, but really Adams kind of came first in this. Adams being probably the funniest writer in English history.
Oh, he's up there.
His lower level stuff that doesn't work.
Except for someone called Shakespeare.
Sure, but again, like, Shakespeare's comedy, it just, again, Adams had that way of revealing humanity through raw comedy.
Oh, yeah.
That I don't think Shakespeare, that wasn't what he was doing. Right. I think Pratchett mastered it.
Pratchett is brilliant. That's.
But as much as I love Pratchett, he didn't have as much outright, just unbelievably, what the fuck just happened funny.
Yes.
And I think that if you took out all of the bits that we think don't work from Adams, and just kind of strung them together, you'd go, oh my god, this is fucking genius. But compared to the heights he could reach, his, you know, his lower level stuff, which was still better than 90% of humanity, feels like a letdown.
Yes.
And that's the issue. It's like, you know, here's a guy who can, like, fly through the air, so when he just happens to walk a few inches above the ground, it feels like a letdown.
That is good.
Because, yeah, no, those books are amazing, and they will always be amazing. And every version of Hitchhikers has something to recommend it for itself.
Oh, yeah.
No, you know, I still actually have my cassettes of the of the radio dramas. I have nothing to play them on, but I bought a set of them years and years and years ago.
Oh, I love the radio drama. I actually loved the TV show, which wasn't on BBC. It was like ITV. I can't remember.
Yeah. No, I've seen it. I think it might be my least favorite.
Oh, fair enough. I mean, it very much looks like a low budget 80s British sci-fi,
right?
But it's I don't know. I think for me is because I binge watched it one day with my dad while we were in Ontario with staying at my grandparents' place. So for me, it has a very sort of specific memory attached to it, which. You know, maybe makes me like it more than it.
Thinking about it, I think it does. It does for me too. And this is the problem: is that I, you know, read Hitchhikers and loved it, and then read it again because I remember, like, I read the books and I was like, "Holy Christ!" I was like a teenager, and it was just mind blowing at the time because who knew something could be like this perfect and funny, even when it wasn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then Barnes and Noble did the first of their big collections of them, and they did like this leather bound, this like fake leather bound, like gilt edged, you know, ribbon in it, version of, you can still find it, of, like, I think it was like the first three books that might have had Mostly Harmless by then, and it had the Ford Prefect short story.
Oh, yes.
Or rather, the Zaphod. Yeah, Zaphod plays it safe.
Yeah.
And I read it there, because I read it again, because I saw that version, I was like, oh my god, this is so fancy, I love it. And I have a thing for, you know, well-designed books, as we all know. And that made me, like, actually look into, because I think that had, like, the intro that was, like, you know, the whole Adam's, like, and here's how this shit happened. And so that made me hunt down some friends who had VHS copies of the TV show and also the radio drama. You know, I found at a con, actually. Someone was selling, like, the actual set of the cassettes in, like, a little box set. It's actually, like, a little clamshell that's about the size of a book. It's very pretty. But I think I OD'd. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just read the books, and then I, like, stopped, and then I listened to all the radio drama stuff, and then I watched the TV show. And by the time I got to the TV show, I was like, I don't care anymore right now. Like,
this
you know,
this,
like, you hit a point where it's too much of a good thing, and you're just reading the same story different ways. But I that might be why I should find the TV show somehow and give it another chance.
That might it might be amusing to see. I think it would look very dated, obviously.
Right, but I'm also...
But...
As I get older, I am way more accepting than I was as a kid of that.
Yeah, me too.
You know, I mean, when I was a kid, it was just like, oh god, this looks like crap.
But now you're like, okay, I get it.
It's a thing.
It's a thing. It's they had to work with what they had. They had certain you put it into like a bit of a historical perspective, and you can enjoy the jokes of the characters.
Right, and I think it's also partially like when I was a kid, like I had watched some Doctor Who and I liked Doctor Who, but I hadn't watched much of it, partially because of that issue. And Doctor Who was my kind of learning to accept the BBC limitations for the fun that they can be.
Right.
You know, I did appreciate actually the weird Doctor Who callback in this episode of Doctor Who, actually, when they go to, you know, here's the farthest point in the universe, and it's just another goddamn canyon.
Because it's a quarry. I love it.
Because it always was, you know?
Yes.
So that's all they could ever do. So I've learned to just kind of appreciate the aesthetic for the aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder if these days I could watch a TV show and just be like, the Hitchhiker's TV show, and just be like, you know what? No, I get it now on a different level.
I think so. Or maybe it'll be terrible. Who knows?
Or maybe it'll be terrible. But no, the movie is definitely, I think, again, if you like Hitchhikers, it is one of the, you know, the four great adaptations that Adams did. I worry that they're going to redo this stuff someday, now without Adams. And, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the Dirk Gently stuff, weirdly enough. I never have been.
Oh.
And I think I need to give it a chance. Yeah, I never liked the books. And I haven't watched the TV show just because I never really liked the books.
I started off, well, the TV show doesn't resemble the books anyway.
Right, so at all.
Although it's funny because when I tried, as you know, I started watching Dirk Gently. I didn't like it at first, but I was all turned around by the end of this, by the end of the season. Actually, I found it a little frantic at times, but once that settled down, it became more, a little more worthwhile. And it's very Doctor-ish and very Douglas Adamsy in certain ways.
Right. Well, because again, it all is because of the shot of stuff.
Yeah, but it's also a little, it's a little bit Max Landis book. What can you do?
Right. But yeah, no, it's just, I do worry that they're going to try to redo Hitchhikers at some point without Adams attached. Mm. And that's a problem for me. Like,
that's probably not going
to
be there.
Because all the adaptations had him involved.
Yeah.
And seeing someone else try to, first of all, they've also never really redone a form twice.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they had the book that I don't read, that he, like, died before he finished, they had someone else finish it.
Oh, right, yeah.
Like, I'm not even really, I just like the first three books. Like, I'm not a huge fan of the later stuff that he did, because it felt like he was trying to recapture the magic instead of just having fun.
I think so. Well, I think also he was getting kind of, he was sick by that point, and I think, yeah, some of his later stuff is like, it felt like he was stretching stuff out quite a bit.
And now there is the one other adaptation that I've never actually gotten involved in that, again, Adams had a hand in, which is the video game.
Ah.
I forget, he did a video game.
Did he?
That was very Adam. Yeah, it was. I don't think it was Hitchhikers. It was like Starship Earth or something like this.
Oh, geez, that sounds familiar.
And yeah, Starship Titanic.
Oh right, yes.
And it's not really. It's not, you know, really a Hitchhiker's Guide thing, but it's still just kind of Adams, and it has the same feel. You know, because he did a novel called Starship Titanic.
Right.
That was based off the game, which was written by Terry Jones. So, you know, Douglas Adams. Fine. But, yeah, no, I just, like I said, no one's ever done another radio drama of Hitchhikers. No one's ever done another TV show. No one's ever done another movie that he wasn't involved in. And I'm just like, I don't want to see that in a certain level. Like, I'm sure there are people who could pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
There are deeply funny people who have all the source material of all the different types, and I'm sure that they could do a decent job with it. I just have literally no interest in ever seeing it.
And there are people who could do a decent job of it, but I don't think those would be the people involved.
I don't know. I think if they had a call, like, there'd be people fighting in the streets for the job. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, how do you think they got that cast? They're like, you want to star in this thing that Douglas Adams, like a Hitchhiker's thing that Douglas Adams had a hand in? Yeah. And they'd be like, oh, God, yes.
Speaking of the cast, whatever happened to the movie career of Mos Def? Because I don't recall seeing him in anything else. He was really good. As risingly good as Fort Prefect.
Well, I mean, he did the Italian Job stuff.
That's right.
And he was fantastic in that.
Mm-hmm.
He was on Dexter for a while.
Oh.
A couple episodes. He did a few episodes of, like, the Chappelle Show. Like, he doesn't do much. I think he has, like, something coming out.
Okay.
But yeah, he's done a few movies here and there.
Yeah, I knew he'd done other stuff, but I couldn't remember.
Yeah, the Italian Job stuff was before Hitchhiker's Guide, so.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that now.
But no, he's a great actor. So I too wish that he would do a lot of stuff.
Also, I remember my favorite sight gag from when I watched the Hitchhiker's Guide movie originally. It's still my favorite sight gag on the rewatch.
Yeah,
it's that great moment when Ford and Arthur are preparing to be like sucked out the airlock. Of the Vogon ship, and instead the floor drops open, and they
yeah,
and it's so perfect, like, because it's relying on like all these other movies you've watched, you know exactly what's going to happen, and it's like, nope.
I think possibly my favorite little bits are all the Havakavua, like the he just starts walking these little spindly robot legs, but taking off the glasses and he has no eyes is amazing.
That's great. Although I have a problem with all the Hamakavula scenes, the fact that like they worship the Great Green Arkle Seizure, but they're not the Jagravardians. They're not the 50-armed Jagravardians. They're people, and that just drives me nuts. I'm like, that's one point where I'm like, you guys, yeah, you made a decision here, and it was not the right decision. But you didn't want to give up on the joke of John Malkovich going, bless you, at the end. That,
yeah.
Which I could tell it was like, they didn't want to let that one go.
Well, again, I think that was just Adam just combining stuff to make it easier.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much, right? Like, the design of Deep Thought kills me.
Yes, I really like the look of the computer.
Yeah, like, there's no reason in the world to ever build it like that, but fuck it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that, like, weirdly, all robots in this universe seem to have giant heads.
I know. Yeah, the design. One thing I liked about the design of this, it was interestingly consistent. I also like the way they did the Heart of Gold sort of travel, just like zipping into different objects. I thought that was. I mean, there's a lot of nice little things about the look of the.
Yeah,
movie.
I like the design of the ship.
Yes. Yeah. Me too.
I didn't at first, to be fair. Like, the first time I saw it, I was like, really? That's what we're doing? And I'm like, no, it looks just ridiculous enough.
Yeah.
Sad it didn't do well enough that we got a sequel. But again, Adams wouldn't have been involved, so I'm kind of glad.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and I think, unless I'm wrong, the very last image of the movie is Douglas Adams' head.
Yes.
Could be wrong, yeah.
But yeah, no, the end of the movie, of course, sets up the restaurant at the end of the universe.
Yes, which we're not going to get now.
Well, which is not fine. Likely.
But you never know. Hell, they're going to be making apparently an R-rated animated Watchmen. So whatever.
Why do we need that?
Because the live action one was who the hell knows why we're.
Well, I mean, I know why they're doing it. I know why they're doing it, frankly. Because DC is bringing in all the Watchmen stuff into the Rebirth stuff. I mean, it has been.
Oh, of course, right.
Since the beginning, so they're just, here's a new version of this. And it's fine. I don't care. I'm like, I'm not going to watch it. And, you know, there are people who will like it, and that's more power to them. And if you're going to do it, you should do it R-rated, frankly. So, yeah, no, it makes sense. I'm just meh. I'm a little bit meh on the whole thing. My big problem right now is I'm in a weird place of reading.
Which is what?
Well, right now I have a book I want to read, which is called Last Call to Nightshade Lounge.
Oh,
by Paul Kruger. No relation to Freddy, I'm assuming.
I was just gonna say.
But it's basically like an urban fantasy type of thing that takes place at a bar. Where it's like monster fight, like supernatural monster fighting bartenders.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, I kind of need to read this book. And it sounds fantastic. But I also have, there's a Kickstarter for the Oral History of Wildstorm, the comic imprint.
Yeah, yeah.
That is on its way. And I've been wanting to read that forever.
Oh, yeah.
And that's supposed to be here like Monday or so. But then Wednesday, the third Gwenda Bond Lois Lane book comes. And again, I can never express how much I absolutely adore Gwenda Bond's Lois Lane books. I mean, Gwenda's YA books in general, like, she's a fabulous writer. But she understands Lois Lane on this deep, deep cellular level. And the books are amazing.
You've praised the...
I will never stop praising them, yeah. And the third one, like I said, it shows up on Wednesday, so I'm like... And of course, recently, I spent this whole week wanting to reread Hitchhiker's Guide.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't watch any version of Hitchhiker's without needing to watch another. Like, if I read the books, I'm like, I need to stop and watch the movie. You know what I mean? Like, I can't help myself. And so I'm like, I don't know what to read, because, like, all this stuff is showing up, and I'm, like, waiting on stuff. This is my big... I suppose, again, my problem should always be this bad, right?
Yes. Well, I have a pile of about a dozen books just sitting by the couch right now, and I've just resolved to just get through them. So I'm
I have a huge pile outside of those. It's just like those are the ones I'm really excited about right this second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have the sequel to Waking Gods, which I was waiting for.
Oh, nice.
And it's just sitting here, and I'm like, I want to get to it, but you know, and that's not counting like graphic novels and comics and shit.
Of course.
Because there's all that, too, God knows. Like, I finally just broke down and bought the trade of all of the Fraction and Brubaker Iron Fist.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, I want to sit down and reread that. But there's all this other shit.
Right. And you have to actually watch more Iron Fist.
I watched another one. I think I watched episode 7 today.
Oh, okay. Which actually is a kind of a turning point.
Sure. Obviously. The problem is it feels like this is where we should have a turning point. So let's do that. Also, as much as the Marvel Netflix shows seem to love having their weird, like, PG-13 sex scenes, which always feel really weirdly awkward, this one takes the cake for awkward.
Oh god, that was the most awkward sex scene I've seen yet on Marvel.
Yeah. That just did not need to happen. I did not, no.
No. I mean, and the thing is, like, the Jessica Jones sex scenes were sort of fun, and they worked because you had, like, it was like, hey, we've got superpowers. What happens if we bang? Okay,
that's... Right, it kind of worked for story as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the Daredevil ones, you assume that there'd be guilt, because it's Daredevil.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the Luke Cage ones were, again, they kind of helped story along. And you can make a sort of case for this one helping story along?
I think you can. I mean, from what I know, yeah, it does. There's something significant about the relationship, obviously. But, it was an awkwardly filmed television sex scene. And I'm like, you guys deserve better.
Yeah, pretty much. But you know, no, the story's just going along. There was also, one line of weird, badly like dialogue that I wanted to have another pass, but it was sold so weirdly well. I was like, I'm okay with this. You know, when Ward tells his father, he's like, just starts ranting at him, and his father just goes, "That was mean."
That's right.
He just felt like placeholder at a table read that they were just like, "No, your delivery nails it. We're just going to do it."
Oh, wait a minute! If you've gotten to episode 7, you've seen like the big fight in episode 6.
Yes.
Sorry.
Which had the Bride of Spiders.
Yes. Like I said, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, I didn't know you could use Bride of Spiders that badly.
I did not know you could like just import like an Evanescence video directly into Iron Fist. But there you go.
Again, if you read the Brubaker Fraction stuff, it works.
Yeah.
But just demoting her from an immortal weapon to just some henchman is just a pain. That's just.
Yeah, I don't know. I was not a fan of the execution. I'll just put it that
no.
way.
Frankly, the show needs more Fat Cobra. But but what doesn't? oh, man. Yeah, anyway, that show happened. But we should end and cue some music.
Oh, yes, right. Exactly.
Blow town. That's not true. I'm not actually leaving town. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But we'll cue some music. We'll be back next week. Veep is coming back. All sorts of stuff is starting up and coming back and all that shit. And we'll have way more to talk about.
Sounds great.
And maybe you'll see Fate of the Furious and want to discuss some of the actual scenes because, oh my God, they were laughable. In the right way.
Yes. No, I think actually I'm gonna do a 5 to 8 or 5, 6, 7
yeah, rewatch. 5, 6, 7, 8, yeah.
And then I'll tackle Fate.
Yeah, I did see, by the way, trailers for a new trailer for Atomic Blonde, which I need to see.
Oh yeah, obviously.
But I also saw a trailer for Free Fire.
Oh yeah, the Ben Wheatley film with Brie Larson.
Yeah, which looked amazing.
It does look great. It looks hilarious. And Charlton Copley. Oh, shit, I saw Kong Skull Island.
I'm sorry.
I totally forgot to mention that. I saw Kong Skull Island.
I forgot that was a movie. So, hey.
Me too, and I've actually seen it.
Huh.
we'll talk about it next week a little bit, I guess.
All right.
Hey, well,
until then, some music. Thank you.